Thank you, Brother Jim. Welcome. In the name of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and a special welcome to our mothers, since this has been established as Mother's Day. And so I want to make some remarks pertaining to Mother's Day. We could divide the subject probably historically and ecclesiastically, because there's proof for both. First, I would tell you that all of you mothers out there, that this Mother's Day is a relatively new holiday. It hasn't been around that long. On May 9th, 1905, a young lady by the name of Annie Marie Jarvis campaigned for a national observance for mothers after the death of her own mother. She grieved, and she wanted the church to set up a special day, and she wanted it to be established that everybody might remember mothers and what they do for our families. Several Mother's Day celebrations had occurred, actually, prior to that time, prior to 1905. But they were for various other purposes. They were gatherings of mothers protesting things like war, and the mothers marched in the temperance movement. But none of these others prevailed. But the idea put forth by Ann Jarvis did prevail. And by 1912, many of the states had adopted the observance of Mother's Day for the second Sunday of May. In 1914, Congress passed a law making the second Sunday of May the official Mother's Day, and beginning with May 8, 1914. The next day, President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed that Mother's Day would thereafter be a national holiday. The site of the original observance of Mother's Day was St. Andrew's Methodist Episcopal Church in Albion, Michigan. And that particular church is now an international shrine to mothers and is a historic landmark. Mother's Day grew. It took off, and those that probably paid more attention to it than the families and the mothers were the business people, the commercial people. Commercialization set in. Mother's Day is probably second only to Valentine's Day for commercialization. 9 years after the first official Mother's Day, commercialization of the U.S. holiday began so rampant that its founder, Ann Jarvis, became a major opponent of an opponent to that holiday, and she spent all of her inheritance and the rest of her life fighting what she saw as an abuse of the celebration. Isn't that ironical? She criticized the practice of purchasing greeting cards, which she saw as a sign of being too lazy to write a personal letter or a note or send your mother a card. She was arrested in 1948. I remember 1948, and I don't remember this occurrence, but she was arrested in 1948 for disturbing the peace while protesting against commercialization of Mother's Day. And she finally said that she wished she would never have started the day because it became so out of control. You know, this trend is really no different from our other holidays, Christmas, Valentine's Day, and take Halloween, the 4th of July. It's kind of interesting, though, that the 4th of July, rather than gaining acceptance, has been downplayed, and rather than being more commercial, it's less commercial, almost like it never happened. Yet Christmas and these other holidays have become the most commercial. Mother's Day continues to this day to be one of the most commercially successful U.S. occasions. According to the National Restaurant Association, Mother's Day is now the most popular day of the year. The most popular day of the year to dine out at a restaurant in the United States. You know, when I was a kid growing up, there were two occasions when we always headed for Grandma's house. For me, that was to the farm. because both of my grandparents were on the farm. And Thanksgiving and Mother's Day, we always gathered there. It was a big family day. All the cousins were there, all the aunts and the uncles. It was a big family dinner. It was a gathering to not just honor the mothers, but sort of the family and then get together. Today, for some of us, those that are more conservative, that may still be true. But for the world in general, it is not. For example, according to the IBS World, they're a publisher of business research, Americans will spend approximately $2.6 billion on flowers, $1.53 billion on pampering gifts like spa treatments, and another $68 million on greeting cards. And, of course, a big portion of that greeting card business started right here in Kansas City, those famous halls. Mother's Day will generate 7.8% of the U.S. jewelry's industry, accordingly, their annual revenue, with custom gifts like mother's rings. 7.8% of the jewelry industry for one holiday. That's phenomenal. The use of flowers in the observance of Mother's Day continues to be popular and is second only to Valentine's Day. You know, traditions that I grew up with are no longer here. And this happens to be one of them. And at this point, and I told my wife this morning, I said, this is going to be part of my sermon. So I'm going to ask my mom, I'm going to ask my wife, and Joy, or Susan, where are you? Okay, I'm going to ask Susan, please stand. Okay, now you'll notice we're all wearing carnations. My mom's wearing a white one. Joyce is wearing a white one. But Susan, our daughter, is wearing a red one. And I'm wearing a red one. Thank you. You can be seated. I want somebody who's under 35, I have to put that caveat, somebody under 35 to tell me, and explain to you why we're wearing these carnations and the different colors. Does anybody know? I know you're under 35, Martha, but keep quiet. Does anybody know? Darren fell right into my trap. He wanted to know this morning why I was wearing a red carnation. Well, the holiday started in 1905. This is a new tradition. But a lot of you people weren't around in that time. When I grew up, you went to church on Mother's Day and Easter, those 2 days particularly. The women wouldn't be caught dead without a hat and long gloves. I can remember coming to conference when I was a teenager in the late 40s, early 50s, right here in Independence. The ladies all wore hats, and a lot of them had gloves. I don't see any hats this morning, and I don't see any gloves. Traditions, how they change and how they disappear. The red carnation means that I'm honoring my mother and that she is still alive. The white carnation that my mother and my wife are wearing is honoring their mothers who are now deceased, hence the change in color. I stood in line yesterday to buy flowers, and it's like my research showed. The florists all over town were doing a booming business. I went to four before I found one that had these. Everybody else was sold out. Nobody was buying single boutonnieres. They were buying fancy bouquets, wreaths, you name it. All colors. I'm not sure what that meant, but it didn't mean like the red and the white carnation, which was the tradition for the original Mother's Day. This is an example of the changing times. And the changing times just within my lifespan. and it will change even more within the lifespan of our younger people. And this has a direct relation to our religion and our church and our relationship to God, because those things are changing too. Now, the things I mentioned are not things that are necessarily sinful or wrong or right. They're just tradition. But there are things that are changing that were right and are now wrong. And we have to be very careful. The first biblical reference to motherhood was probably Genesis 3:16. I'll read it to you and you all know what it is. I don't think there's another one before here. It says, this is after God went into the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve had committed the sin. God tells women, unto women, he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. Then it goes on and talks to Adam. Adam, he got two paragraphs aimed at him, but that one will signify motherhood. The first reference that women would be those that would bring forth the children that would populate the earth. God then laid the groundwork for both Mother's and Father's Day, actually. And I don't think he did it for that purpose, but it resulted in that. And establishing and perpetuating the family unit when he gave Moses the Ten Commandments. And I want to read you that one which pertains to Mother's Day. It's in Exodus, and I'll go to Exodus 20. You all know what this is, but we need a refresher. Verse 12. Honor thy father and thy mother, and thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And of course, I want to emphasize that this morning to honor thy mother. But it says honor thy father and thy mother. And God had a reason, because he wanted there to be a line, a perpetuation of the family line, the family name, the connection between mothers and fathers and grandfathers and grandmothers and the new family that is formed when a marriage occurs. Let's go over to Deuteronomy. It says the same thing in Deuteronomy 5:16. Honor thy father and thy mother, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged, that it may go well with thee in the land which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Because when you keep peace in the family, when you honor the father and the mother, when you keep the big family going, you will have success. You will have peace. You'll have your own support group. That's the terms we use today. And in 1 Nephi 5, page 60, it's verse 167. Wherefore, worship the Lord thy God, and honor thy father and thy mother, that the days may be long in the land which the Lord thy God shall give. Now, the Lord added a little here that isn't in the other two, and I like this, because we have a wedding coming up pretty soon. And in fact, we had a shower the other night, and the men got together and talked. We had I don't think it's really a stag party, but it amounted to that because there weren't any girls there. But we talked to the groom-to-be about responsibilities and about forming a new unity, a new family. And that's very important, because you notice here he says, wherefore worship the Lord thy God and honor thy father and thy mother, that the days may be long in the land which the Lord thy God gave thee. It's difficult to separate Mother's Day, motherhood, and marriage. And I want to go into that just a little more. But first, I want to go over to Ephesians, because Paul referenced these same references. It's Ephesians 6 and 2. I'm going to start with verse 1, however. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And those children that are old enough to hear me and understand what I'm saying, obey your parents. Okay? Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise. And that first commandment with promise is the important point here, because the Lord said, if you will honor your father and your mother, if you will keep that family commitment, if you will keep that connection, you will have a better life. And that was his promise to you. And that's true. That was the first of the Ten Commandments with a promise. It says, that it may be well with thee and thou mayest live long on the earth. Very important. Very important. Now, why is this emphasized? Why is the family unit so important? Why is our regard to our mothers so important? And as I said, it's difficult to separate Mother's Day and motherhood and marriage. If you think of the starting of a life as birth, and as the children grow up, they obey their parents. At the point, especially nowadays, at the point that they become of age or are on their own or are responsible for themselves, or they get married and form a new family unit like the one they came from when they were born, then they are no longer under the jurisdiction of their parents from an obeying standpoint, because now they are their own unit and are now raising their own children who are going to obey them. It's like a chain effect. But to keep the line and the respect, and that's the key word, honor thy mother. Always respect her. There'll come a time when, no, she won't be telling you what to do. You're going to be telling yourself. But you still give her respect, because there'll be advice. There may be even help. Venture to say the mother has raised the children, but then when the children start having children, she comes along and helps you raise them or have them. Let's read Genesis, second chapter, 24th verse. Speaking of the marriage, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. At that point, they are one. They are no longer the children who then obey their parents, but they will reverence and honor them as they then grow on to have their family and raise their children. The same thing is in Matthew 19:5. The important thing is they are no longer twain, but are one flesh. Very important. Those scriptures are often read at weddings. And of course, brides become mothers. In fact, when a young lady is getting ready to be a bride, she should be thinking about that, planning ahead. What kind of a mother will I be? How will I handle this situation? Just like husbands-to-be will plan for the responsibility. Used to be in my day and age, you didn't get married till one, the husband had a full-time job, had money saved up in the bank, he had a place already picked out to live, and then when he had all that stuff, he went and proposed to some girl. Nowadays, I think the proposal comes first in a lot of cases, and then they worry about where they're going to live and where they're going to get their money. Things change. Not right or wrong, just traditions and things change. Ask you a question. Who is the most famous mother of all? You better say your own. Your own, of course. But historically, it could have been Eve. She's the mother of the world. Or Sarah. She was the mother of Israel. I prefer to think of Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ. Unfortunately, that idea, the world took it and ran with it. Satan used it to generate a false doctrine and an attitude toward Mary and her position in the church. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of pagan holidays referred to in the literature as Mothering Sundays, and that particular holiday is still observed in the UK. And also in some European countries, Mothering Sundays. It's not our Mother's Day. And it is based on a pagan holiday. Greece has a Mothering Sunday. And it's based on mythology. And it's not the same as our Mother's Day. I want to go to Luke 1 and 28. And also 1 and 42. The angel visiting Mary said, and the angel came in unto her and said, Hail, thou art highly favored. The Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women. And that's true. But that did not establish a rank or pecking order, as we'd say today, in the church. In verse 42, when Elizabeth came in and spoke to Mary, and it came to pass that when Elizabeth heard the salutation of Mary, the babe leapt in her womb, that's John, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Ghost. And she spake out with a loud voice and said, she repeated what the angel had said, Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb. Those two verses have been capitalized on by the other churches, and particularly the Catholic Church. And that's not what we look at as Mother's Day. Very quickly, because I'm running out of time, let's evaluate motherhood, traditions, past, present. Let's go to Titus. There isn't really much in the Bible talking specifically to mothers and about duties. It's more or less in generalities. In fact, there's probably more about what not to do. But in the second chapter of Titus, verses 3 and 5, Paul is addressing here the aged men, the young women. And I'll start at verse 3. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becoming holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Now, things over the years have changed. Anymore, it takes two incomes and sometimes more than that to run a home. Many of the mothers today not only take care of the children, but they support income. Many of the fathers who are working and supporting income have to help out at home. When I was a young man at home, those duties were differentiated. Mom did one thing and Dad did another. They helped and coordinated, but it's a different way of life today with a young couple raising little ones. And I would dare say it's harder They have more challenges and more things to lead them into the world and to lead them astray. They have to be very careful. I guess that verse 5, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Whatever mom does, the kid's going to notice, and he's going to repeat it. You can count on it. Sometimes that can be embarrassing. Sometimes it's gratifying. Let's go to Alma. We'll go to page 514. This is Alma, the 26th chapter, and the 56th verse. This is one of the verses pertaining to the famous story of the 2,000 young men. Verse 53 says, I'll read 53, 7, and 8. Now they never had fought, the 2,000 men that is, yet they did not fear death. They did think more upon the liberty of their fathers than they did upon their lives. Yea, they had been taught by their mothers that if they did not doubt, that God would deliver them. That's a strong belief. Knowing that you're going in harm's way and God is going to deliver you. And they rehearsed unto me the words of their mothers, saying, we do not doubt our mothers knew. Giving their mothers credit for knowing God and what he taught and the blessings that he gives the family if you follow his commandments. And it came to pass that I did return with my 2,000 against these Lamanites who had pursued us. And of course you know the story. They won. And none of them were killed. Tremendous testimony. Tremendous testimony. Let's go to Mosiah, 6th chapter. It's on page 236. Verses 30 to 33. Starting with verse 30. And it came to pass that we did inherit the land of our fathers for many years, yea, for the space of 22 years. And I did cause the men should till the ground, raise all manner of grain and all manner of fruit of every kind. And I did cause that the women should spin and toil and work all manner of fine linen, yea, and cloth of every kind, that we might be clothed in our nakedness. These are examples, I guess, of what might be termed domestic duties for the women, for the mother. Over the course of time, man has changed those duties. But the principles of righteousness, good and evil, God established, and they have never changed. So as we evolve and we forget traditions and go on to new traditions, our job is that within the context of how we're living, we keep the original principles of God because they're still the same. You can't say, well, no, today it's different. It's harder for the man or the woman or how we live. So therefore, we can do this over here. No, not if this was something God said don't do. You don't do it. You have to change your way of life and practice it in the context of the very first principles that God established for us, which are still in effect. He didn't change them. And we aren't supposed to. Now, sometimes that gives us a problem. The children, by and large, learn their values to go into life at home with their mother, more so probably than their father. But however the arrangement within the home, it behooves that mother and that father to live righteously, that they set a good example, that the children know what to do. When the children go out in public and use bad language, or cheat, or steal, or do whatever they do to get into trouble, by and large, it's because of a laxness or something they observed that they judged to be, well, it was all right at home. I saw mom or dad do it. And then they apply it to their life when they get out there. And the truth always comes home to roost. That's an old saying. I told Kate, I was going to mention her this morning, someday Dylan is going to show respect and he's going to be thankful for all the things he's being taught at home. And the fact that mom fed him and changed his diaper and did all, he probably won't mention that later, but that she did all those things for him. And that's what respect and honor is toward our mother today. So I say, enjoy Mother's Day. Have a good time. Pardon me. Have a good time today. Respect your mother. Show her a good time. Enjoy the family or whatever you have planned. But remember, foremost and above all, the one that is responsible for all of that is your God. Give him thanks. Thank you.
I want to thank Alvin for the thoughts he expressed this morning. As I was sitting there, I was reminded of of the fact that the scriptures tell us, and Christ said it in his own words, that he is to be was our example and that we were to follow his example. And it's not one of those things that Brother Alvin mentioned, but he sure came awfully close to it when he said that we're to honor our parents because it's written in the scriptures. Christ honored his mother also while he hung on the cross. He knew that his time was up and he couldn't care for her any longer. And so he turned to John and gave him instruction to care for her. And it says that he took her to his own house and took care of her from that day on. True respect. He didn't leave anything undone. Let's use number 309 for our closing song.